actually, this quote has been attributed all over the place, variously to athlete Yogi Berra, scientist Niels Bohr, author Mark Twain, and dark false prophet Nostradamus. And apparently, at least as far as I can research, it goes at least as far back as a 15th century book of Danish proverbs. The quote is, "Predictions are hard, especially about the future."
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Well, the political season rolls on, and I want you to know that in what I'm about to say in introducing my sermon, I want to be clear about this. Donald Trump is not my guy. I am not campaigning for Mr. Trump or for any other candidate. The point I want to make is only about the course of predictions in the current electoral process. That said, when Mr. Trump announced his candidacy, it was immediately predicted that he would not be taken seriously. That prediction failed. When Mr. Trump did seem to capture the imagination of a lot of voters, it was predicted that when the first debate occurred and people saw Trump stacked up against serious candidates, he would be dropped like a hot rock. That prediction failed. Then Donald Trump made some injudicious remarks about John McCain. I'm sure some of you remember that. And it was said, oh, that's it. No more Trump. That prediction failed. Well, once August arrives, the silly season will be over and people will start to look to issues rather than personality. And then Trump will disappear. Only he didn't. In September, Trump's political demise was forecasted for October. In October, it was forecasted for November. In November, the pundits said, once the holidays are over, people will take a deep breath and get serious, and Trump will go away. Predictions failed. The first primary, the skip debate, that will do it. Trump's remarks about George W. Bush, that's going to do it. Evangelicals in South Carolina will never go for Trump. Or, as indicated by last night's primary results, maybe they will. And this last week, President Obama went out on a limb predicting that Donald Trump will not be president. Given the state of the prediction track, if I were him, I would not have done that. To quote, and actually this quote has been attributed all over the place, variously to athlete Yogi Berra, scientist Niels Bohr, author Mark Twain, and dark false prophet Nostradamus. And apparently, at least as far as I can research, it goes at least as far back as a 15th century book of Danish proverbs. The quote is, "Predictions are hard, especially about the future." Christianity has its own record with failed predictions. Every few years, someone or several someones thinks they have figured out when the world is going to end, knows the date. So far, we've got a 100% failure rate going on there. But people keep trying. It's embarrassing. And as per an earlier message from the book of Acts in this present sermon series, I wish that people would just give that up and learn to live for Christ in the times that we have. But to keep trying. But I also wish to note that if Christians have been too eager to try to predict the end of the world has returned the favor and been far too eager to predict the end of Christianity. I want to say right now, I Twice this week, I almost threw this sermon out and started over. And I'm not sure that what I want to do this morning is accurately even a sermon at all. I'll let you decide. But in the end, I just settled, as I often do, settle. This is what I think God gave me to say, and it wasn't that I couldn't say it, so on we go. Continuing, fifth chapter of the book of Acts. In chapter 4, the Jewish religious authorities threatened the apostles with grave harm should they continue to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. They responded by continuing to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. The Jewish religious authorities had them arrested and held for trial. But when they sent word to the jail to have the prisoners brought to the court for trial, the prisoners were gone. Luke says that an angel opened the doors of the prison and set them free. I believe that. Others will make of it what they will. But discovering the jail cells empty, the Jewish religious authorities set out to find the apostles and predictably found them in the temple precincts. Guess what they were doing there? Preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. So they had them hauled in for their court date. And they said, "I thought we told you not to do that anymore. Quit preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ." Peter said, "We can't." And proceeded to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to the courtroom, which infuriated the religious authorities. And they intended murder. And now we are caught up to the point of today's reading. A wise and well-respected rabbi by name of Gamaliel urged caution. "These messianic cults," he said, "they tend to be short-lived. They go away pretty quick. Leave this one alone and just see if it doesn't. If by any chance these men really have found the Messiah, you're not going to be able to stop them anyway. No one can stop God. And you wouldn't want to be caught trying to stop God. So let's just wait a little longer. See what happens." The Jewish religious authorities took Gamaliel's advice, sort of. They flogged the apostles, warned them even more severely with their current lacerated and bruised backs, serving as sharp incentive not to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ anymore. Soon, the authorities would forget Gamaliel's advice entirely. They would throw themselves into the battle headlong, meaning to completely destroy the upstart Christian religion just as quickly as possible. Their chief foot soldier would be a man named Saul. Well, he would be their chief foot soldier for a while, and he would be good at it until he became a Christian and the greatest advocate of Christianity in history. So let's keep that in mind for a little bit. The Jewish religious authorities of the first century were the first to predict the soon coming end of Christianity, and then they set out to fulfill their own prediction. Theirs also was the first failed prediction. Of course, they tried it with the crucifixion of Jesus Christ before they tried it with the apostles, and it failed in both instances. It would not be the last such prediction. That's what I want to talk about this morning. The events of the book of Acts set up a kind of paradigm that is followed, repeated, generation after generation, and it would be impossible for me to cover every example in our allotted time this morning, so I have tried to select just a few. And now, the slide came up a little early, but I'm ready for the slide now. Remember that in the 10:15 service. Nietzsche, 1849 to 1900, said, "God is dead." 1901, God says, "Nietzsche is dead." Carry that as an example. After the Jewish religious authorities, as you are perfectly aware, the Roman secular authorities got in on the act. Several emperors over a period of centuries predicted and set out to accomplish the end of Christianity, each confidently asserting that Christianity will not survive what I intend to do to them. Buddy, they did some pretty harsh and terrible things. Each successive effort failed. But as with the Jewish religious authorities and their guy Saul, it wasn't just a matter of the failed prediction. There was an ironic twist. Rather than Rome conquering Christianity, Christianity conquered Rome, being made the official state religion by the Emperor Constantine somewhere about 320 years after Christ. The Roman Empire, which predicted the end of Christianity, became the Holy Roman Empire. And all that remains of it today is the Catholic Church. Sometimes I am convinced that God has a really twisted sense of humor. And Rome would not be the end of this business of predicting and setting out to achieve the end of Christianity. The Islamic wars of expansion in the 7th and 8th centuries took a shot at it too. But I'm not going to dwell on that beyond to say that the 9th century dawned on a still living Christianity, and that was 12 centuries ago, and here we stand. Let's take a look at a few more instances as time moves forward. Voltaire, famous French philosopher, satirist, and all-around creep, hated everything about Christianity. He declared religion to be adverse toward and hostile to reason. He really seems to admit that religion was averse to and hostile to his preferred moral practices. But he predicted that Christianity could not survive the so-called rationalist enlightenment then in progress. He predicted that Christianity would breathe its last gasp within 100 years of his own lifetime. Voltaire died in 1778. For those without calculators, that's 228 years now and counting. In terms of that God's sense of humor thing, Voltaire's prediction specifically said that within that 100 years after his lifetime, you would not be able to find a Bible except as a museum exhibit. He wrote it down. He was confident about it. His Geneva estates, after his death, became the headquarters of the Geneva Bible Society. I'm just saying. Karl Marx, 1818 to 1883, declared that Christianity must and would die. He called Christianity in specific and religion in general the opiate of the masses. What he meant by that was that whenever the poor, oppressed people got tired of being poor and oppressed and cold and hungry and dying young, that their leaders, who could have solved their problems by sharing their hoarded wealth, would instead dispense a drug called religion to numb the minds of the people, keep them zoned out and enslaved. The religious leaders did not actually believe, Marx insisted, in all their religious teachings, especially that part about a blessed eternity to come. That was just the drug that they used to keep the populace in line. Hence, Marx said, the abolition of religion as the illusory happiness of the people is the demand for their real happiness. And on the basis of this conviction, Marx and Lenin after him created a legally enforced atheist state. Some will remember the days of the Iron Curtain. And what we learned over time about the things that happened behind it. And if I could go back and ask the people of those days living in Marx's predicted atheist utopia one question, it would simply be this. Are you happy now? Because friends, they weren't. And then I would note that though Marx and his successors were willing to spill rivers of blood, imprison virtually entire generations of people in large locales, employ whatever degree of brutalism they thought was called for, and bankrupt one of the largest political entities in the history of mankind in the process, they did not manage to destroy Christianity. Faith lived behind the Iron Curtain, despite them. It lives there still. Well, let us leave aside the philosophers and despots for a moment. Skip over Nietzsche, at whom I already took a point in the PowerPoint slides. and look at something a little different. Just a decade before I was born, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. Now, I'm just curious, how many know what I'm talking about when I say the Dead Sea Scrolls? Okay, well, that's better than I anticipated. A lot of people don't know what a big hubbub this was, and some people don't even know about them anymore, but it was a big hubbub. The Dead Sea Scrolls were the sacred writings of a monastic community called Qumran that was active at the time that Jesus walked the earth. And when the people of that community, Qumran, in their little walled commune, realized that the jig was up and the Romans were coming and they were going to destroy everything about AD 70, they took their sacred writings and they hid them in caves in the cliffs around the Dead Sea. Now, I want you to understand, they had other stuff. They had money, for instance, and their money was just left there or taken by the Romans when their community was destroyed. They didn't try to hide and preserve their money. The one thing they thought they didn't want the Romans to find and destroy were these scrolls, so they hid them. And those scrolls hidden in AD 70 remained undiscovered until 1947. And it was a big deal. Lots of people speculated about all the new knowledge that was going to be gained concerning the time of Christ, because now we have the Dead Sea Scrolls. Some people predicted rather confidently that the Dead Sea Scrolls would at last spell the end for Christianity, because what they contained would demystify Christ and show that that religious account in the Bible was a sham. The Vatican sat on the scrolls for a while. They did this because the scrolls had to be preserved and cataloged. Some of them were crumbled into pieces and had to be pasted back together like a jigsaw puzzle before a copy could be made that could actually be handled and worked with. Some of the scrolls had been rolled up and the layers of the roll had stuck together, and they had to be unrolled painstakingly a fraction of an inch at a time in steam rooms with a lot of special treatment before copies that could handle could be made. Then they had to be cataloged and filed. And then a translation process began, and you should understand that most times scholars will not release translations of this sort of thing until everything has been translated. When you're dealing with the writings of a closed community that disappeared 2 millennia ago and wrote in languages that no one on earth actively speaks anymore, it may be that you found something in the first paragraph of the first scroll that you thought you knew what it meant, and you find out later that you didn't have any idea what it meant. But the key to understanding it is in paragraph 79 of the 96th scroll. So you wait until you have everything translated. Now, I just want you to understand all that as a process. That's why the Vatican sat on the scrolls for a while. But some people developed a kind of conspiracy theory insisting that the scrolls would spell the end of Christianity, and the church knew it, so they were not going to let them go. They were going to be hidden away forever, so we wouldn't know that Christianity was false. One such scholar, or so-called scholar, was named John Allegro. He is the only one on whom I will focus. He was, by the way, an atheist. And I always love biblical scholars who are atheists. He promised that the scrolls would absolutely destroy Christianity. And he began to release a few words at a time of the one scroll he had been assigned to work on, which is a violation of scholarly practice. And he released those little translations of snippets from that scroll without any photographs or substantiation that this was what it actually said. It appears that he had ulterior motives. One, he wanted enough tabloid popularity to sell a bunch of books, which he also wrote and released while the Vatican was still working on the body of the Dead Sea Scrolls. You want to know, Allegro said, why the Vatican won't release the Dead Sea Scrolls? Because they show that Jesus never existed except as a drug-inspired hallucination in the heads of first century mystics. They were all eating mushrooms. Allegro's book made this and many other claims. His personal correspondence reveals a second ulterior motive. He wrote to a friend who was considering becoming a Catholic, and he said, "By the time I'm through, there won't be a church left for you to join." Unfortunately for Allegro, although the Vatican took a while, they released the scrolls a little faster than he anticipated, including a complete version of the scroll that he had done some work on, revealing absolutely zero evidence of drug use in the Qumran community or any of the other things that Allegro promised. As a matter of fact, those scrolls which were the most precious things the people of Qumran owned, the one thing they hid to save from the oncoming Romans, you know what they turned out mostly to be? Copies of Old Testament scripture. Isaiah, Daniel, Zechariah, Deuteronomy. And that was an interesting thing because prior to that time, the oldest copies of scriptures that we had came from about AD 1100. And suddenly we had copies of many Old Testament books, almost all of them, 1,000 years older than anything we had previously known. And the only thing they proved, once they were carefully translated, was that over that 1,000 years, Scripture had been so carefully, faithfully copied by hand that not one single verse of the Old Testament fell into question as the result of the new material revealed by the Dead Sea Scrolls. Allegro, by the way, was discredited. His career ruined, his job lost, his publishers issued a formal apology for having published his book, which was immediately withdrawn from the market. Today, Sam Harris, author of two books, The End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation, bears the nickname The Atheist Apostle. Now, you can read Harris's books. Yeah, you get right there on Amazon and pick them up and read them if you have an appetite for nasty-tempered mud-slinging and tantrum-throwing. But I'll give you the short version. When you boil it down, Harris argues, on the one hand, that you should never accept religious beliefs without evidence to validate them, while he argues, on the other hand, no amount of evidence can validate religious beliefs. I think you can see how this would work out in his head. Nevertheless, he confidently predicts that within the next 50 years, probably 40 now given the date of the publication of his books, Christianity will have lost all influence, become irrelevant, and be well on the way to its long-awaited, much-anticipated disappearance. This is his prediction. I say, get in line, Sam. I probably will not be around in 50 years. Some of you will be. And I look back here at Will and Jen, and I look over here at Andrew Perkins, and I look at a few other people here this morning who will probably be around in 50 years, and I give you my permission in 50 years to track down Sam Harris, if he's still around, or his descendants, in any case, and to tell them for me, many, many more than I have covered today have predicted the end of Christianity from the moment of its birth right up to our own time. All predictions have failed. This should be a great encouragement to us, a comfort. Many have spent their lives in a vain attempt, as Gamaliel put it in the book of Acts, to fight against God. God laughs and moves forward with his plans. If you have faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ, simply know that the long line of predictions of the demise of the source of your faith have all failed. The source of your faith stands. If your faith is not yet really based in the gospel of Jesus Christ, let this long series of failed predictions be an encouragement to you to put it there at last.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.